To see examples of what we talked about on this episode, along with further information, go to bunchofdorks.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to
Two Dimension Podcast,
the comic book podcast
with no direction.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Two Dimension Comics, episode number
193.
I'm your host, Dallas Busha, and I'm sitting in my bedroom drinking a glass of wine because everyone in my house is sick except me. And I am Skyping with
Don.
What's up, Don?
Not much. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm okay, man. Yeah, we were going to have a couple other people on the on this episode, too, but schedules just kept conflicting, so unfortunately it's just the two of us, but I think we're going to have a good time anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So what's new, man?
Not too much. It's been busy. It's always busy, but seems like we can't keep up with anything these days.
Yeah, you know, we've been trying to connect for, like, the longest time, like, to get together and do a podcast, and I've always got so much stuff, obviously, with my daughter Emily, and just it seems like we never have time, and we finally decided, hey, let's try and Skype something because it'd be so much easier because we live, what, about 40 plus miles away from each other, I think?
Yeah.
Jeez. Something like that.
When we're talking about this, about busy and making time, us lesser humans have trouble understanding. Besides Dallas working a full-time job, supporting his wife who's, you know, starting a new career, he's got a small daughter he's taking care of full-time. He has a band, writes songs, puts all that together, basically works as the manager for the band, and has decided that his comic book, how many pages is it, The Mighty Blue?
It's close to 200 pages now. It's getting up there.
In my life, I think I've done 20 pages of comic book stories. And he's done almost 200 pages, and he decided to fix some of it. So how many pages have you added?
I don't know. It's funny because you make it sound like I have so much going on, but it's really not a lot.
Well, you know, but when you talk to Dallas, he's not frazzled. As you've listened to the show, that's what you get in real life. He's just a easygoing guy. Like, you'd act like he had nothing but leisure time, but he's got a lot of irons in the fire, and you handle it quite well. I'm sorry that everybody in the house is sick. But I'm glad you're not. Keep it that way.
I know. I'm just waiting for it to hit me. You know, it's probably going to be soon. Well, no, because so you're kind of, I was going to say how you're the glue that holds it all together.
Ugh.
The podcast it is. But, you know, it's kind of true because this episode, the whole point of this episode is because of a fan that contacted you, I believe, and you've been kind of keeping in touch with him. And actually, I feel bad. He's not a fan. He's just he's a friend that listens to the show.
Right.
And his name is James. And
James, you know, Perry.
Yeah, James Perry. James and Don have been going back and forth for a little while, just talking comics, talking shop and whatnot. And James was nice enough to send Don some books. So send the guys some books. And so we wanted to kind of read a few of them and maybe go over them and review them and talk about them on the show. And that's the point of this episode is Don and I read All New X-Men Volume 1. And it came out a number of years back. I want to say a good 4 or 5 years now, maybe? Something like that?
Well, what's funny was I wasn't familiar with it. When James sent us the books, the reason he contacted me was I was the only one he could find contact information. He went to the sidebar of the blog. Since then, we've added a contact section on our blog, the Two Dimension blog. But he mentioned some things he'd just like to hear us talk about, and he sent a bunch of X-Men trades. So we decided we'd talk about this. I wasn't familiar with it, but it was on one of the older episodes. Rook talked about it. Rook mentioned he thinks he read it, and he did. He talked about it on the show.
That was a funny part, because you were reaching out to us, and you're like, you know, we all decided which book we wanted to read first, and it was going to be All New X-Men, and Rook was like, you know, I don't remember. I think I might have read this one. I don't know. And then so Don goes back and finds out that on one of the older episodes, sure enough, Rook actually read it and he reviewed it, like one of our really old episodes,
yeah,
like number 24 or something like that. So that's kind of cool. I definitely didn't remember that. But So, hey, by the way, do you like that when I'm on the show, we're like 5 minutes into the show and we're already on track, we're on point talking about the book? See, when there's an episode with Don and Al, guys, it might be 20, 30 minutes before they really get into the meat of something.
Yeah, we veer off real quick on everything.
So, all right. So, okay, let's do first impressions of this book. So this is All New X-Men Volume 1. It's called Yesterday's X-Men. It's written by Brian Michael Bendis. It's drawn by, I think it's Stuart Immonen. And okay, first impressions. What did you think initially, just kind of going into it? I know neither you or I really read X-Men books these days. It's been, gosh, it's been over a decade since I've read an X-Men book constantly or monthly, you know?
Well, X-Men is something I loved when I was younger. The Dave Cockrum work, the John Byrne, you know, Chris Claremont work, I loved. I stayed with the book after Byrne left for a while. It was while Romita was drawing it. I finally, it's when the Marauders showed up. I just decided, well, I don't know. It was just, nothing was ever resolving. It was going off in every other direction. And I lost interest. I remember when you and I were talking, you said that's when you started reading it about that time.
Yeah, because I'm a little younger than you, so that was kind of a jumping on point. When I was like maybe 7, 8 years old, I jumped in around the Australia X-Men time.
Yeah, it's every once in a while I would pick up a book. You know, Art Adams or somebody would draw something. I mean, it was something that I always wanted to like. I read the Excalibur book when Alan Davis was drawing it, and so I always stayed with them every once in a while. But it's just that there's so many X-Men books, X-Men spinoff books, and I don't know. I lost interest. So.
Well, yeah. That was one of my main problems too, especially when I stopped and wanted to jump back in, is it was so convoluted. I mean, it was bad enough back in the 80s, you know? But, I mean, in the 21st century, there's so much history, so much backstory, so much character, so much that's happened. I mean, where do you start? How do you really get into it? So, this book, All New X-Men, on the cover, I think this is the trade, on the cover of it, there's a quote from IGN.com. It says, "This is the place to start reading the X books." I don't know if I would completely agree with that, though, just because coming in to this book kind of cold, not knowing any of the backstory in the past 10, 15 years, there's still a lot of convoluted history that you're probably going to need to know. I think Don and I, we are kind of lucky because we know a lot of the X-Men history from the 60s to maybe the 80s. You know, so a lot of this stuff, a lot of these characters are known to us to an extent. But it seems like there was a big event preceding this story that you had to have a little bit of knowledge of, and we didn't. But, I mean, that being said, it didn't really hinder my enjoyment, because I still thought it was a fun book, and I did like it. And I didn't, even though I jumped in not knowing exactly what was going on, I quickly caught up to speed, as it were.
Yeah, it's... I don't know. With any X-Men book, there's so many things happen, but that's any comic book that's been around for a while. You can basically just pick up, and while you don't know, you figure you'll find out later. There's a lot of stuff in this I didn't quite know, but part of it, I remember Cyclops had killed Professor X, and Rook had always talked about that on the show. So inadvertently, I'd hear some of the things that happened. I don't think this would be what I'd recommend for jumping on point with the X-Men.
No.
In my opinion. But, I mean, it is a book I didn't think I would like. But call me a liar, I really enjoyed it quite a bit.
Yeah, you know, okay, so going into it, I'm like, all right, you know, I'm a little leery. I like Brian Bendis. I like a lot of what he did with the Avengers a number of years back. So I started up not really expecting much, not knowing what I was getting into. The beginning, it's kind of okay. It starts a little slow. The first main scene, and I always have trouble with this in comics for some reason. It's kind of it's kind of air quotes trying to show a modern take on kids, on the youth, and so it's got like some teenagers going to a nightclub. This kind of little area that seems like it's going to be really dated in 10 years, you know. So I'm going and thinking, all right, I already don't really like it. I'm not a big fan. The art's kind of iffy. Stuart Immonen's okay. And then Cyclops shows up. You see Cyclops, you got Emma Frost, you've got Magneto, and suddenly I'm like, wait, he's so in this story he's a villain and I don't quite understand what's going on. It's kind of fun just being dropped into it and not understanding what's going on. But from there it just starts running. I mean, you get introduced to the core characters again. Eminem's artwork, it's a little up and down for me. His designs on the page, it's sometimes confusing for no reason to me, but I think that's just the dynamic layouts that he uses sometimes. But there's a few characters. I love how he draws Storm. I think that's spot on. Some of the characters look great. Wasn't a big fan of how Iceman looks. But regardless, once you start seeing the X-Men in the story, I mean, the story just takes off from there, and it gets more and more interesting, and I quickly got pulled in. I mean, it's a very fun story. What do you think?
Well, when you started reading this book before I was, and you were talking about the artwork, and it was kind of confusing. You didn't care for all the double-page spreads. And the reason it starts out, they're at a party, you know, or nightclubbing. One of the guys in the story, in this group, finds out he's a mutant. The power just appears. And that's when Cyclops and Magneto show up. It sucked me in right away. One thing about the artwork, I love the artwork. I'm not familiar with this guy. I've heard his name before. I love how he draws Iceman now. Just a little backstory. I've never liked Iceman. You know, when the whole thing started, he looked like a snowman with boots. And as he went on, he was kind of this crystal ice looking guy. I never cared for him. And with the Jack Frost looking creature he is, I think that's kind of neat.
It's funny. I'm kind of the opposite. I liked the old snowman style Iceman.
Yeah. I like how he drew him. I liked all the designs to it. The only, and even though I haven't read the books, I thought it was strange, Alanya, you know, Rasputin.
Ileana,
is that her name? To me, that character never made sense to me either back then. She was, you know, Colossus' little sister. And they come to find out, I guess she had some kind of mutant power, they found out. But then she was taken to the underworld in a miniseries. And I don't know. That's a problem I have with Chris Claremont, was all the characters he had, you know, you ended up, didn't Storm, like, become a ninja? You know, I mean, there's a whole bunch of things. He just kept adding more and more things. Kitty Pryde had a dragon sidekick. I think she became a martial artist, but she's still a kid. She was a computer genius. You know, it just...
Here's the thing. You know, Claremont, unlike a lot of writers, a lot of creative teams on mainstream books these days, Claremont was on that book his initial run for, what, 16, 17 years straight? So he's just building and building every single month. So there's going to be a point where it just starts to get absurd, because he's probably run the mill of his, you know, he's run out of his ideas, and he's just going through all these like crazy outlandish ideas that he probably wouldn't have tried in the first few years. But he gets to the point where, like, all right, well, I'm kind of running out of things to do this month and I've got a deadline. Let's try this. So, you know, he's pretty much throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks at that point.
And there, he had all these plot lines he never resolved. It was just one plot line on top of another one. But
he was notorious for that, wasn't he?
Oh, jeez. But that's what I mean. He kept adding. So Colossus' little sister, I can't even say her name. You know, when she went to the underworld and stuff and came back, it could do the suit of armor and the transportation and stuff. I was kind of on the wall about it. I didn't really care. And this is kind of neat. It's also kind of neat that she's no longer a new student, that, you know, she's a full member of whatever it is, and you got Colossus and Magneto with her.
You mean Cyclops?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Cyclops.
Yeah, I didn't expect that either. That was completely out of left field, though, having Magic, Ileana, with the villains.
That was kind of neat. Magic?
Yeah, Magic. So, like I said, the story just kind of starts building, and you're introduced to the current team with Storm and Beast and Kitty, Iceman, even Wolverine, and a lot of them are teachers at the school now, which I didn't even know that. I also like how Stewart draws Kitty. I think he does a pretty good Kitty. So the main plot line of the story, I won't get into it too much. You know, spoilers here and there, guys. But Beast ends up going back in time, finding the original team of X-Men from the 1960s and bringing them to our current age. And one of the main reasons is for Cyclops, who in modern times, who's now a villain, to kind of see the error of his ways and to see what the team and himself were like back in the 60s. Sorry, I don't know if that sentence made sense. I'm tired. So this is for me where the book really shines and where the dialogue shines, because a lot of the dialogue, it's still that kind of serious, over the top, angsty kind of stuff that the X-Men were known for in the 80s and 90s, and it gets a little old sometimes, right? But seeing the 60s X-Men and the way they interact with each other and the world, and especially the modern world that they're not used to, it's fun because it's through their eyes, it's through fresh eyes, and it's fun, it's different. And this is by far my favorite part of the whole book, is the original team stuck in the modern times. I loved it. That's what kept me going, I think.
I have mixed feelings about a lot of these things you just mentioned. I agree with everything you said, but I can't believe Beast did what he did. There's a couple of things. He was having health issues. And then he, like I said, he thought to bring in the old Cyclops over the new the current Cyclops to see the error of his ways. Honestly, made no sense to me, but it doesn't make any sense about, you know, you got two teams, the old one and the new one, in the same timeline. That always bothered me, and they decided to stay.
Well, here's the thing, though. I'm sure whoever dreamed up this great idea of bringing the 60s characters to the forefront, you know, in theory and concept, it's wonderful. But in execution, how do you do that? How do you feasibly put this inside of a story and make the reader go, okay, that makes complete sense? I think Bendis did a pretty good job, considering that's a really tall order to do, you know, to make, like, you're right, it doesn't quite make sense, and that Beast did that, and why exactly would he do that? But, you know, you're reading an X-Men book. It's a book full of people that can fly. So at some point, you have to just kind of just go with it and enjoy the story.
Saying what I said, we were going to read the first one. I'm already up to the fourth one. I didn't stop reading. I couldn't wait to read the next one.
Up to the fourth trade?
Yeah.
Holy cow, man. I'm almost at the second.
So, yeah, when I'm saying this, I can't wait to get to it. The only disappointing thing I've got was the third trade ended, and then the fourth trade, I'm like, wait a minute, is this correct? I missed three issues. There's three issues that, for some reason, between the third trade and the fourth trade, unless they're out of order, I'm reading them electronically. But all of a sudden, the teams are different, and I don't have any reason why. And then as they discuss things, they start explaining, well, this happened, and they're mad. Okay.
So is that something that happened off scenes, or is that something that just happened in, like, another book?
I think it happened in the three issues I missed.
Oh, okay.
Because a lot happened in those three issues. In every issue, a lot happened. I tell you, they're bringing all kinds of characters into this. Characters I haven't read since I was in college way back when, and I've enjoyed it. And even though the circumstances are different, I was never lost. They bring up all the stuff that happened in the Byrne Claremont years, you know, the Phoenix Force. Jean Grey, you know, she started out with telekinesis. When I read the book, she could read minds. She was a really strong mind reader.
Well, and that's the beauty of this first trade too. As you're reading it, the X-Men characters from the 1960s that were pulled into the modern age, that's pre-telepathy Jean. So all she can do is telekinesis. She doesn't know she could read minds. And so when she has that realization, the other X-Men are like, "Yeah, can't you read minds right now?" And she's like, "What are you talking about?" Oh yeah, sometime in the future you'll be able to read minds. You know, it's kind of cool for her to come to grips with that, and she ends up being able to do that in this story.
Well, and I never understood that reading it. I just
I thought it was all the same thing. Because it's fun.
Right, but I mean, when I was reading them before, I didn't understand that she couldn't read minds before, and telekinesis and telepathy is two different things. There's also a few shorthanded things, like how she starts acting like she was when she was Dark Phoenix. You know, how she's reading minds constantly. There's no boundaries with her.
Right.
And then Kitty is trying to explain to her why the other young X-Men are getting upset. Wolverine's getting upset. Get out of my head.
I love how they Wolverine's portrayed, at least in this first trade paperback. He's almost the comedy relief in so many scenes, and it's fun to have that.
And he's scary. He's more scary in this than I've ever seen him, which is saying something. But the artwork and the story are working really well together. I like the costume designs. I like the title design. The new X-Men, how they got it.
Yeah.
The design of the book is blowing my mind. I can't wait to see everything in here. There's not one... Dallas and I disagree on this because I don't find the layouts confusing. I find the layouts dynamic, but it tells the story. I'm never lost. I find it thrilling. I'm reading them on an iPad mini. So as I read it, you know, when it's a double page spread, I just have to turn the iPad over, you know, horizontally. That's fine. That's the only thing that disrupts me, but that's not the artist. That's just the device I'm reading it on.
So I don't know if it was, speaking of the artist, I don't know if it was because I was getting used to Stuart's Eminem's art a little more or if he was actually getting better, but I started enjoying it a lot more throughout the first trade. Mm-hmm.
He's fantastic.
Yeah, by that last issue, it's wonderful. There is, if I can find it, there's, I think it's in issue 5 or whatever the final issue in the first trade is. There is this beautiful double page spread with Jean, and she's kind of the centerpiece of it, and surrounding her are different scenes from her past.
Yeah.
And it shows her as the Black Queen, as Phoenix, as Marvel Girl. And it is just beautiful. We'll have to post that. We'll put that image on the... on the website because it's really, really nice. And yeah, Stuart's art just keeps getting stronger and stronger through here though, man. And it really culminates near the end. There's a good fight between Cyclops and Magneto's team versus the original X-Men team. And it's, you know, it's kind of a bittersweet fight, of course, because, you know, obviously Magneto for the past few decades, he's been more of a misunderstood character. And so these original members from the 60s see it in very black and white terms. And, you know, he's a villain. He's nothing but that. So initially when they first see him, they're just shocked that the modern day Cyclops is siding with him.
Yeah, it is confusing because Magneto was always he was ultimate evil. In some other Marvel books like Supervillain Team Up, he was always comedy relief, which threw me. But when Chris Claremont was writing the book, all of a sudden he controlled more than just, you know, his magnetic powers were, they worked with anything, even metal ions in the air. He could control all kinds of stuff. And he was like Darth Vader in the first couple of Star Wars movies. He was just menacing. And then I remember it was in the 80s when all of a sudden...
As far as the 1960s character could be menacing in Marvel Comics.
Yeah, but... Well, I'm talking the 80s, the late 70s when Byrne and Costin, or Byrne, Claremont, and Austin were doing it. But he was all-powerful.
Yeah, the beauty of that is the team actually lost the first one or two times they fought him. He just whipped the floor with him.
But all of a sudden, he started seeing his side and his mutant rights. And then they started playing the whole thing about him and Charles Xavier, you know, how they were friends at one point, you know, and colleagues. Okay. And then he ended up taking over the school.
Oh, yeah.
And,
I mean, he was such a great character the way Claremont portrayed him, too, and the way he fleshed him out. There were a couple backup stories in the old classic X-Men books in the 80s. There were two stories in particular that I'm thinking of that kind of showed a little of his backstory, his origin, and I love those stories, a couple of my favorites, and they were written by Claremont, drawn by John Bolton, who is one of my favorite X-Men artists. I can't remember what they're called. I'll have to look them up. I'll have to put it on the site.
Yeah, it's nice. There's a lot of things going on that sometimes a little too black and white for me. Like, again, Jean Grey, how she's acting. Of course, then later they explain, you know, when Kitty gets on to her and Storm gets on to her, that this is all happening so fast, and all of a sudden, as soon as she came in this timeline, all of a sudden her powers start manipulating it. She can't control it. She doesn't have the maturity for it. Okay, I'll buy that. It's really upsetting to the old team to see what happens to them in the future. You know, Jean Grey finds out she dies twice.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And that's something hard.
Imagine learning something like that, you know, especially at her age, too.
But it's tragedy all the way around for everybody. And, you know, when the book ends, they make a decision, and not all the team is in on the decision. They're outvoted. And again, to me, that's kind of a recklessness, not just with the team, but even the current X-Men. I like how they're showing how fractured everything gets. And some of the stuff that you've told me about, like all the mutants were gone. And then the old team keeps saying, you say all the mutants are gone, but I'm surrounded by mutants. Yeah. And I thought, yeah, that's true, but... That explains some of that. Again, reading the X-Men even in the 70s and 80s, it never made sense why it was such a high-privileged school and they only had 5 students.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, this isn't feasible. Since the movies came out, I'm guessing it was because of the movies. The first X-Men movie that they did, it was a real school. You know, students, you know, Wolverine was a professor. That made more sense.
Yeah, you know, and I, the first time I noticed it in the comics was around the Grant Morrison run, New X-Men, that he did, came out around the same time as the movie, too. I don't know if it had anything to do with it. But Morrison's run, he introduced the idea of it being a school, and there were just tons and tons of students, you know, being trained by the core members of the group.
Yeah, I saw that. That was about the time the movie came out, so I figured they were just trying to, you know, coordinate with them. But that makes sense. I like Kitty in this story. My only complaint with Kitty Pryde is I didn't recognize her all the way through it. Nobody draws her the same.
You're absolutely right. That's always been a problem, I think. There's a couple artists that I think have always done her well. Of course, Byrne did, because Byrne, that's his baby, basically. The other guy would be Art Adams. I feel Kitty Pryde is instantly recognizable when it's drawn by either Art Adams or Alan Davis.
Yeah, see, I like the way that both of those guys drew her, but none of them draw her the way John Byrne did.
Well, you're right, but this is the Alan Davis drew the Excalibur version, which
right.
is she's older at the time, almost a different person by then, you know.
But you know, I mean. When John Byrne drew her, even as an older Kitty in Days of Future Past story, you could tell it was her. And like I said, I do like this character. She's great. She's a seasoned veteran. I noticed she doesn't have the dragon any longer.
That's a shame.
I like the fact, I think it was her when Jean Grey said she can't read her mind. Why not? And Kitty says, I'm trained. And I thought, that's pretty neat. I like this, but I just don't understand why nobody's drawing her the way John Byrne showed. You know, I'm not even close. Again, that's a problem I got.
So. Well, I grew up, like we discussed earlier, I was reading the X-Men in the Australia era with Mark Silvestri art. Kitty wasn't in the team at the time. So, meanwhile, I was reading Excalibur. So, my first experience with Kitty Pryde was the Alan Davis artwork. And so, that's, to me, that's the definitive Kitty. That look, that style. Yeah. It was later on that I went back and read the John Byrne books.
Did you know there was a history to this? It never happened. There was an art book by The Art of John Byrne, which is quite good. I think SQ Productions put it out in 1980. But it had a long interview with John Byrne, and he was talking about all their plans. You know, him and Chris Claremont. They were a great team. But in the X-Men book, what they were going to do was, after the death of Phoenix, They were going to, Scott Summers left the team, and Storm took over as the leader, and then later Kitty came in before all that happened, and Professor X had her wearing the old, yellow-black X-Men uniform. And John Byrne said their plan was that they were slowly going to bring in more kids, and the old X-Men were going to be leaving. And you were going to have another team of kids in the yellow and black outfits like Kitty was wearing with a mask. And, of course, they didn't get along. John Byrne left the book, and Chris Claremont, it seemed to me like he did everything he could not to do those plans anymore.
But ultimately it happened with the New Mutants.
Yeah, well, the New Mutants came about. Except
that was initially going to be mandated by Marvel. They wanted to have an X-Men spin-off book. And Claremont decided, you know what? These books, the X-Men, this is my baby, so I'm going to be one step ahead of them and create my own X-Men book and submit this to them and say, hey, let me write it.
Well, someone, it went to the Marvel offices. I can't remember the name of the guy, but he said, the X-Men book is doing really well. You should have another book. In an interview, the guy says, don't tell me, X-Men West. And I said, yeah, that was it. Chris Claremont was talking about it. And so him and Louise Jones, or Louise Simonson, they, argued with it, and they set up the New Mutants. And that's where it came from. It was to make sure that it was all controlled under a tight rein.
Which was a great book, man, for 10, 11-year-old kid in the 80s? Oh, man, that was the bomb right there.
I read them, too, and I was shocked when Bill Sienkiewicz came on the book. I thought, what? Really?
Yeah.
I love that. That was a rush all the way through.
Why don't we go ahead and take a quick music break, and then we'll jump right back in.
You got it.
All right. Thank you.
Your Dimension can be found on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. If you like what you hear, you can subscribe, rate, leave a review, tell a friend, or like us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.
All right, that was Robert Fripp and Andy Summers. And it's a really disturbing song called Paint and Dance from an album called I Advance Masked.
Nice. Wait, is Robert Fripp, is that King Crimson?
Yeah. And Andy Summers is the guitarist from The Police.
Nice.
And I found that at the Navy base in the Philippines. We pulled in and I always went to buy tapes and comics, and they had it. It's just an album, it's just two guitars all the way through. Robert Fripp and Andy Summers were good friends in England. And Andy Summers, I guess he's with the New Animals at one point. He was always on the cusp of these bands, but never could really, make it in one. Something happened, the band would unfold. And then Robert Fripp got him an audition with Neil Sedaka. So Andy Summers was Neil Sedaka's guitarist for quite a while. And then he met Sting and, was in The Police. So anyway, after The Police split up, they put out this album. I think they've done a couple projects, anyway.
I was thumbing through this all-new X-Men book, and I found that double-page spread I was talking about, and it is in issue 5, and it's beautiful. It's got a shot of Marvel Girl in, the green outfit, probably the Neil Adams era.
Yeah, that's X-Men. When Neil Adams changed him.
She's, in the center, and there's, almost a spider web of images behind her, and it's got pictures of her fighting when she was in X-Factor. It's got her as the Black Queen. It's got her as Phoenix, then Dark Phoenix. It's got her when she went into the future with Cyclops to raise Cable, which was a crazy story from the 90s, I vaguely remember. It's got her once again in X-Factor when Madeline Pryor is the Goblin Queen. It's got just a ton of beautiful shots. It's got an image of her in a leather jacket in the Grant Morrison era. It's just a bunch of beautiful shots from every era of the X-Men you can think of, and it's just wonderful. It's a beautiful shot by Stuart Immonen.
That's one of my favorite pages. As a matter of fact, I was already preparing pages for the blog to stay in front. Even though we didn't talk about it, I chose that as one of the pages, so it's funny
Perfect.
You mentioned that. Yeah,
Perfect.
I love that.
And I'm thumbing through, and I can. You mentioned about Kitty Pryde, how sometimes you couldn't tell it was her. At some point, Stuart Immonen decides to put Kitty's hair kind of in a ponytail, and from then on, I feel like she's a little more recognizable because she's the only character with a ponytail. Number one, and number two, that looks kind of she had that look during some of Excalibur, I believe. Maybe that's why it's more recognizable to me.
Yeah, well, when I say that, I like how he draws her. It's not that. It's just that when John Byrne drew her, she was a lot of eyes.
Well, so her character is Jewish, and the way Byrne drew her, he really accentuated some of those features. I mean, she always wore the Star of David. And then John Byrne's Kitty, if I recall, she had very curly hair. And no other iteration that I've seen has that.
Alan Davis kind of made it a little wavy.
Yes, he did.
Paul Smith, it looked like her hair was nothing but ribbons.
Yeah, that's right. That's another artist that I like his Kitty, too. I thought Paul Smith did a wonderful job.
But that's the point, was it's like she was a completely different character. And in one part, this is later, I'm getting ahead of myself, but in one part, she mentions to the old team that she's Jewish. And when I say that, I always wondered in my life, how would you really know if somebody's Jewish, unless they tell you? But at the same time, I remember that character from the late 70s. I wouldn't have been surprised if that character would have told me she was Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
But in this story, she says, I'm Jewish. And they were all surprised because, people don't take me for Jewish. To me, unless you're wearing the traditional Jewish clothing, how would you know? But
because I feel like she was you're right. The original character from the 70s, she was... That character was honoring that heritage. The Kitty in this day and age, she's so far removed from the original version of Kitty that you would never know
right.
that she was designed to be Jewish.
Well, John Byrne drew her as a young Jewish girl. Everybody else draws her as a Gentile. And I mean, that's the thing that gets me. I mean, everybody, when they draw something, you have your own stylistic tendencies and stuff. But, you know, John Byrne had a template that was strong. It was a strong character. And then they even showed her as a, you know, older woman. And I could always tell the two, you know, were Kitty. And since then, it's like, I don't know, it's almost like drawing Storm short and white, you know, with red hair. I mean, it's just, you know, when I say that, though, I loved how he drew this. I love the character. She was really strong.
I do also like how Eminem draws Wolverine. He's got that thuggish face. He looks like his nose has been broken dozens of times. Like, that's the kind of Wolverine I love seeing.
And he is scary. I can't stress that. This guy, he's threatening. He's dynamic.
It's funny you said that earlier, right after I mentioned how I feel like Wolverine was used for comic relief. I was specifically talking about one or two instances where there's a scene where Jean puts Wolverine to sleep because he's giving her a hassle. And he's got his face on the floor and his butt in the air, and it's drawn for comic.
Oh,
for
no, comic, there's you know? Several things where he got the short end of the stick. He gets upset because they steal his motorcycle. I don't know if it's in this book, but yeah, he is the comic relief in a way, but not in a slapstick, you know, cheap way.
Because he's such the serious, almost over the top character. Dark character in the book, you know, it's more easy to kind of make him a little more comedic sometimes, I think, you know, because he's more comic booky than some of the other characters.
Well, that's something else in this that I find complex is, you know, when I read the old X-Men stories that Byrne and Cochran were drawing, you know, Wolverine wasn't really, he was always the odd man out in the group. He didn't like being in the group. He was his own person. He was always doing everything he could to get under Professor X's skin. Towards the end of Byrne's run, there's one part where when Kitty Pryde first went to Danger Room, and that's one of my favorite pieces in the X-Men, was all through that, they kept talking about how the new team was all individuals and they wouldn't work cohesively as the old team did. And, who was it? They said after the Phoenix thing happened, they showed them in the Danger Room, and Kitty Pryde walked through the Danger Room, and it was just a cakewalk, you know. But that last panel, it shows the X-Men in the control room. Storm's at the microphone, you know, and it shows all the X-Men laughing together. They didn't, you know, there was no dialogue or anything. It just showed them together laughing. And you could see that they were a team that went through everything. And they were a team and a family. And Wolverine is really busting a gut. And he's laughing and says, oh, I would love to see the look of Charlie's face. He spent a week, you know, carefully programming this. And she just walked through it like it was nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that is the most genius thing I've ever seen. And then, you know, Professor X comes in and says, Wolverine, I prefer you call me Professor or Charles if you must, but never Charlie. And then Wolverine says, okay, Chuck, and walks off. And, I mean, that was always the relationship. But in this one, you know, it shows, it kind of surprises me what member went to what team. You know, the Jean Grey School for Gifted Youngsters, which was, you know, the old X-Men, Professor X. And then you got the team that Magneto and Cyclops has, which I never thought I would have seen. And I'm surprised at who went to that one.
Huh.
And then it shows Wolverine teaching, and he's talking to these students and even Cyclops about how much he thought of Professor X to the point where he's almost, you know, breaking, you know, choking up.
Yeah.
But it's not in a soppy way. Like I said, the story and the artwork, the design, the colors, the lettering, everything on this is, when I say this carefully, it stands up to the old X-Men team I love so much of Claremont, Byrne, Austin, Orzin Chowski, and Glenna Swain. That was, to me, that was the ultimate team. Everybody on that was just right in sync with each other. The lettering, the design, the artwork, the story. This one, to me, it's right up there with it. Even though I wish they would have done something else instead of bringing the old team back and with the new team. Suspension of disbelief, that's okay, but I wish they would have came up with some other storyline. But nevertheless, I'm reading the fourth one, and I'm going to keep reading them.
Yeah,
I can't wait.
You got me curious. I'm going to have to read the next couple trades, too, because it is good, and I can tell it's going to get better, you know? It can only go up from here.
There was a fill-in issue, and I think the fourth one, and the artist is really good, but it's just I was a little disappointed that, you know, Stuart Immonen didn't do it. But I'm looking at it, well, this is really good. I mean, if this guy would have done all of them, I would have liked it just as well. But nevertheless, it was a bit jarring to me. And then he came back. I thought maybe he left the book, but he came back on right away. There's a lot of work from this team.
That's good, too, and especially in this day and age in mainstream comics. You don't always see that.
Yeah, it's I'll tell you, again, that was the problem I had with the X-Men. I love the X-Men. Like I said, every once in a while, if the creator I like picks, you know, does it, I might pick it up. But this one, it was strong. It brings back the feelings I used to have reading them. It talks about all the continuity that goes on that I haven't read that I didn't really have too much interest in reading.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was going to agree with you. I went in a little leery, thinking, okay, well, here's another X-Men book. I haven't enjoyed one of these in a long time. But it grew on me really quickly to the point where I was looking forward to reading the next issue. So, I'm really glad we read it. And James, thanks, buddy.
Yeah, thank you very much, James. That's he just sent us some more CDs. I did tell you that. I haven't even looked through them. But, you know, one thing he was wanting me to... he mentioned he was interested to see what we thought of The Max. You remember that book, The Max?
Vaguely, I never read it.
Yeah, I never read it either. It's kind of a funny story. I never got out of comics, but there was a point in 1990 where all the stores around the area, one went out of business, one completely changed. Like a metaphysical store that had a rack of comics. It was weird. And so I couldn't find, you know, comics around here. Basically, I'd wait till I go on vacation to another state, and I'd just buy a bunch of comics in. You know, sometimes I go out of town, I'd find a store. So I was kind of out of it, but not because I wanted to. Well, then a store by my house opened up that I went to for years. And I remember all of a sudden there was all these books I never heard of. There was The Goon, that Eric Powell book. There was The Max and Lobo, which those books aren't related, but to me they were, because I'd see them up hanging up on the wall. I see posters. I see the issues. And I always kind of grouped those books together. It was always some big, odd character.
Yep, I remember all those when I was young. I didn't read any of them. I remember seeing them at my local shop, though.
Well, I loaded The Max, the first trade, in the iPad as well. I was looking through it. It wasn't what I expected. When I see it, I can't think of who the creator is on this, but Sam Keith. But you know, it's pretty neat. Actually, I'll be honest, I kind of like it. I stopped reading it because we decided to read the X-Men. So I thought, all right, I'll get to the trade and read that. And I like the trade so much, like I said, I'm on the fourth one. But the artwork reminds me a lot of Arthur Sydam. And also, I can't think of that. I can't think of his name. Eric Griffith, the album cover artist. He did Appetite for Destruction.
Oh, yeah, okay.
He reminds me of a few, mostly, like I said, a lot of Arthur Sydam. He's his own man. He, you know, I even see a little bit of Neil Adams in it, but
well, I'm going to have to check this out now.
Yeah, it's like I said, I just started reading. I don't really know exactly what he is. He's got these kind of weird crab hands. he's like a homeless superhero creature. But, I mean, the layouts are dynamic, the style, the colors are incredible. he lays pages out and does the display lettering, letter forms, like Walt Simonson and John Workman did. Like I said, this person is this old man. He's not trying to copy anybody's style, but when I see these, I'm just telling you how I can relate to what some creators I liked.
Gotcha.
But I don't know, it's interesting. But that's, like I said, to me, that's when the comics world kind of changed. When I started coming regularly again, that's when Wizard Magazine was out and everything was, that's when the speculator market started. But you had all these other books that were popular that I kind of forgotten now.
Well, on that note, I'm going to have to dip out because it's getting a little late here.
All right.
So, but I want to thank James once again for just kind of reaching out to us and, you know, starting the discussion. So we appreciate that. And thanks for, turning us on to some of these new books. And I hope everybody enjoyed listening to us talking about all new X-Men, and we'll have a lot more to talk about in the coming weeks. You got any last thoughts?
No, I think I'm okay on it. Again, thank you, James. And thanks, everybody, for listening. I appreciate it. And we've been getting some feedback on the blog. Thank you very much.
Yeah, every single person that has said something to us and reached out, thank you so much. We appreciate it. It's nice to know we're not just recording in a void, that there's a couple people out there that actually enjoy hearing us talk, or at least hearing Don talk.
it's nice.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think that's about it for this week. So thank you once again, everyone, for listening. We're going to have another episode out in probably about a week or so. So until then, take care of yourselves and
read more comics.
The end. You can find Al's other podcast, Slow Robot A Go-Go, Dallas's webcomic, The Mighty Blue, and Al's blog, Destination Nightmare, on the sidebar of our blog at bunchofdorks.com.
And click on the Cyclops!
My name is Mao, and with me as always,
Dr. Morbius
from Parts Unknown.
Question mark?
This is the promo for Slow Robot A Go-Go, the B through Z grade movie review podcast.
Yes, B through Z. You know what that means, kids?
Mostly Z grade.
That's right.
If it's obscure and you've never heard of it and it's horrible, we're your men. We're your men. We're here. We're the dudes that are going to review it and talk about it. And you're going to be like, why would they talk about that? And we don't know either.
And then you're going to want to run out and get these movies and pay big money, Blu-ray money to get these movies, because they're all great and you're all going to love them.
We're waiting for that phone call, Criterion. If you want a hungover idiot and a guy who knows a lot about movies that no one's ever heard of,
who's another idiot too.
We're your men. We're here for you, man.
We're the usual gang of idiots.
But anyway, go to bunchofdorks.com. Click on the first button. That's Slow Robot A Go-Go, and then you're gonna hear all about B movies that you never knew existed.
That's right.
And then click the other buttons for fun and enjoyment.
Two dimension button, which is what we're on right now. Comic books. And all that other good stuff. Go to Radio St. P. We got other podcasts on there, too.
We got crazy podcasts out the wazoo. We've lost our minds.
Hey, lady!
Oh, no.